Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chris Cornell was one of the best rock and roll singers of the last 40 years. He had an incredible 4-octave vocal range that showed he could be incredibly powerful and delicate, sometimes in the same song. And the music he created was as diverse as his range. He came up in the music scene in the 1990s as the frontman for Soundgarden and Temple of the Dog before taking over lead vocals for Audioslave. He also released a handful of solo albums that included singer-songwriter material with an acoustic guitar, the theme from a James Bond movie, and some more electronic work with Timbaland. He also unfortunately struggled with depression and addiction until his tragic suicide in 2017. Today on The Prisoners of Rock and Roll, we're going to celebrate the life and music of the amazing Chris Cornell. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 58. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm here tonight with a man who is skilled behind the mic, the drums, and the bar, the one and only Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks and McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia, and we are just one of the dozens of awesome shows on the Pantheon Podcast Network. What's going on, brother?
Hey, man, I'm chilling, dude. The football Eagles thing, that was a rocking time. Too bad we lost, but business was good, and I'm just appreciative of the business that we got for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm sure the bar was jumping.
It was amazing, dude. There was a film crew there filming some kind of documentary about how passionate the Eagles fans are, and they just recorded the bar like the whole time, like during the game was going on. I was like, I hope this doesn't screw up your documentary that they lost. So like, oh no, this is like a whole thing for like next year. I was like, all right, right on.
Very cool. And yeah, if you want to capture the passion of the Philadelphia sports fans, McCusker's is a great place to do that. I live kind of almost on the cusp of Giants country, so I was watching with one other Eagles fan other than my wife and daughter, and I was taking a lot of crap, but it's all good, man. It was a nice run.
Hey, man, professional wrestling, baby. That's all I gotta say.
I was afraid maybe we were gonna have to take an extra week off. If there was a parade this week, it was gonna throw everything off.
Yeah, so
that's the sunny side of it.
You know, parade would have been awesome, but dude, it would have been a shit show. People drinking from like 5 a.m. until we kick them out. That's a long day, Holmes, especially with Eagles fans, dude.
Well, it was a fun run, and we're back doing the podcast. I'm wearing my McCusker's sweatshirt.
Right on, right on, right on.
Representing, ready to rock and roll. So
that's what we do best.
Absolutely. And tonight we decided we're going to talk about Chris Cornell. I don't know, this has been on the topic list for a while. we one of the times we were just messing each other, throwing ideas around, and I was like, we should just do something on Chris Cornell and all the music that he made. And you were like, fuck yeah, dude, that sounds great.
You know, it's interesting to me. Like, you know, I always appreciated Soundgarden, but I couldn't get down with them because they were too muddy and depressing, like, kind of thing. But I loved Chris Cornell's solo shit automatically. Like, even like Temple of the Dog, I love that shit. But something about Soundgarden I couldn't get down with.
It's interesting because they were one of my favorite bands out of the 90s. But I'm also a big, like, Alice in Chains fan. I like that kind of, like, sludgy, muddy sound.
We went and seen Soundgarden together.
We did when they reunited. We went and saw them in Philadelphia.
Remember how many fucking people were there?
It was, yeah. Remember some guy was getting his ass kicked by security?
Ugh.
Guy was getting stomped because he was yelling at his girlfriend or something, and he shoved her, and then guys just whooped his ass in front of everybody.
The warden was with us. The warden was there, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. We had a whole bunch of guys with us, and that was cool, man, because I had gone and seen Roger Waters like the night before, and that was the really elaborate stage. It was he was doing the wall, and then this was just four dudes on a concrete slab just blowing everybody off the stage with rock and roll. It was really cool.
They were great. He like you said in the intro, Bruce, he's the greatest vocalist in the last 40 years, man.
You know what, dude? You said that as we were trading all the notes, getting ready for the show. And I don't know if you said it expecting me to disagree with you, but when you said it, I was like, oh yeah, no, dude, you're right.
It was like a revelation more thing. Like I'm saying, okay, like I said, I'm not like a huge fan of there, but I'm sitting listening to his box set that's on Spotify all the way through. I was like, this motherfucker is the greatest singer in the last 40 years, easily.
I put something on our Twitter account too, that we were getting ready to do this show and listening to a ton of stuff. And almost everybody who commented was like, oh yeah, he's one of the greatest of all time. He's the best rock singer since Freddie Mercury and all that other kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, dude. And that, I'm so glad I got to see him a bunch of times. I saw him with Temple of the Dog a year before he died. They did a reunion. That was awesome. I've seen him with Soundgarden. And I seen him on his first solo tour at the Tower Theater, man. It was fucking awesome. I sat in the front row.
That's cool, dude.
Yeah, it was amazing.
I saw him with Audio Slave. And I just totally remember listening to them and thinking, man, rock and roll had just missed his voice so much. And I'm so happy that he was doing something again.
Absolutely. Along with those Rage guys.
Yeah. I said Soundgarden was one of my favorite artists out of the 90s. I don't know, man. I just remember sitting in my room listening to Bad Motorfinger all the time. And
oh, yeah. I remember when that fucking album was like first introduced to like MTV kind of thing. And like Rusty Cage fucking came on. Dude. That song is like metal, and they tried to fucking put it in like a grunge kind of thing.
Yeah. And I started, I don't know, man, as I get older, I kind of realized that grunge was just like a marketing ploy.
I'm telling you, we're going to do a show about the whole fucking scam of grunge, dude.
Yeah, dude, let's do it. I'm really glad we decided to do this. And
he was a special guy, dude. He's a really special, one of a kind.
Yeah. Dude. Everyone around our age, we all remember when Kurt Cobain died, but Chris Cornell, I think when he died, I think that hit me a little bit harder.
Yeah.
It might have been because he was kind of like the last man standing, you know, Kurt Cobain and Layne Staley and Scott Weiland. And he was only 52 when he died, but he was still kind of like the senior spokesman for the 90s and that whole generation. And I don't know, man, it sounds lame, but I just thought he was going to be a dude who was just going to kind of get old with us, and he would be, you know, he wasn't light years older than us. I just kind of thought we were all going to, he'd be making music into his 60s and maybe beyond that.
Well, you know, Bruce, you know, mental illness is a really hardcore thing, bro. And it was so shocking that he, you know, ended his life, because I thought he was over the hump. You know, like, oh, he's putting music out all the time. He's doing shit with his daughter. And when he died, you know, I was like, holy shit, I can't believe he went from a gig and went right to the hotel room and ended his life. It's fucking one of the craziest rock and roll things to happen in the last whatever years, bro.
It's a really tragic thing. And yeah, I knew he had struggled with alcoholism. I didn't realize some of the other problems he had had until I started doing research for the show. I was reading a lot about him and his music and everything else. And even like, we'll get to the end, like after he passes away, but all the shit that went on with his estate and his family.
No, it's just awful.
It's really sad, man. It really is. Just
I was thinking this week, I'm like, this is going to be a sad one, man. There's a lot of sad shit in the story of Chris Cornell.
There is, but there's also so much great music, man.
Oh, yeah.
I thought maybe the way we tackle it is maybe we'll do like Soundgarden, Temple of Adult. We'll do the bands and then maybe we can jump.
Yeah, man, let's just, you know, do our thing.
The acoustic stuff and we just kind of figure it out. One thing I thought was interesting of him, I never realized that he was a high school dropout.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. But he was also, when he was in high school, he was fucking around with PCP already, which is, you know,
Angel Dust.
That's a shit. Like, you know, you see some guy like gets high and tries to fight like 14 police officers and stuff. So
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Pretty hardcore. You know, the Seattle Sound, they were really the ones that kind of started all that shit. They were the first, one of the first bands to sign on to Sub Pop Records in Seattle. And we did a whole show on the history of Sub Pop Records. Uh-huh. You can go back and check out. And then they were one of the first bands to leave Sub Pop and sign a major record deal. So they really kind of brought a lot of those other bands with them into the mainstream.
That fucking first Soundgarden album is fucking killer. They're Louder Than Love or whatever it's fucking called.
And I kind of felt like some of the really early stuff, dude, he just didn't have his, he hadn't found his really like sweet spot.
He was really young, dude. He was a young guy.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You know what's interesting too? And I mentioned in the monologue that he has a 4-octave range, and not to get too nerdy with that, but an average like schmuck like you and me has a range of like 1.5.
Yes.
And like a professional singer can have 2 or maybe 3. 4 is like Freddie Mercury, Mariah Carey, Prince, like the, yeah, think about Unreal. Some of the most amazing voices, and he could do that. It was just,
and
it
was amazing, one of them. Man. Yeah, man, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, he was one of a kind. There's was only one of them. Only nobody ever fucking sounded like he did. There were so many like beautiful little acoustic things, like we did Sunshower in the beginning of our monologue. But then you hear something he does off a fucking like Rockin' Audio Slave and he's screeching, man. He was just off both ends of the spectrum.
And it was, you normally pick the song that we open with. And that was a great pick because, yeah, we could start with the opening, you know, the opening rip in Cochise on that, you know, Audio Slave first track. He just punches you in the face or, you know, Outshined or something. But showing his delicate side was a great call.
I just seen that he was a really sensitive guy. He was in a lot of pain. It sounded like his whole life. I figured we have to start this a little memorial more than a rocking thing.
Now, his music was all over the place. And I think that's one of the things I really respect about him is he never stopped recording and he never stopped like doing the next thing. I read, there's an article from Spin Magazine. They're talking about him. He said, Chris was always moving on to the next thing and then the next thing and the next thing, whether it was from Sub Pop to A&M Records, Screaming Life to Super Unknown, Soundgarden to Audio Slave, Hip Hop Beats to solo acoustic tours. He was always searching, always looking around the corner to see what interests him most. And then he was gone. And I was like, that's perfect. That's, you know, he tried so many different
things. He did everything. I don't know. Did he do any opera kind of shit? I don't know.
I don't think so. And, you know, Freddie Mercury's always Freddie Mercury and will be in his own thing, but Freddie Mercury also would do all kinds of different, you know, the disco songs and acoustic songs and that kind of.
He could do anything. Yeah. He could do anything. Cornell could do anything. Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. So we started talking about some of the really early Soundgarden stuff. I did put Beyond the Wheel from Ultra Mega OK on here. Just kind of an example where I didn't think he found his voice. I'm going to play this at like a minute 30. Hang on a second.
Cool. I don't know.
It's heavy. It's a Soundgarden guitar sound, but he sounds almost like King Diamond in that a little bit.
Almost like Testament, man. Like something like that, you know? It's interesting. I guess they were just trying to get on a record deal. They're doing whatever made sound at that time.
And like you said, he was a younger guy at the time, and they were still finding their way. Cornell also started as the drummer for Soundgarden, and then he eventually moved to guitar. I thought that was kind of interesting. So
again, he's a hell of a guitar player, too. Wow.
Yeah, which just shows how talented they were. I mean, I always think of Kim Thiel being, you know, the dude ripping all the guitar riffs. And then, he, you know, of course, he played with Tom Morello and Audioslave. But yeah, a lot of the acoustic stuff, dude, he's really good.
Yeah, I've seen him. Unbelievable performer. Unbelievable. Like anything. He could do anything.
Soundgarden had, you know, two runs. So they had the, you know, the beginning, and then they became a huge popular in the 90s, and they broke up in like 97 because they just started fighting with each other on the direction of the band. And I could see that, dude. If you're the guys and you have kind of found your niche, and Chris Cornell sounds like he just wants to do everything and try all this different shit, you know, I get it. I could see where that was coming from.
I kind of remember Cornell being a prima donna kind of vibe, like for years, you know, and until they broke up. But then they got back together and we went and saw him, and he was so fucking humble. Like, I was really blown away by that, because everything I ever seen, he was like real snobby kind of thing, you know, but like the way he was like thanking the crowd for, you know, 20 years of whatever it was at that time. It was a nice side to see, and it changed my whole opinion of him.
Yeah, so Soundgarden was still together when he passed away. I'll get to some of that at the end, like the stuff that they were working on. But, you know, and the guys in the band, they actually decided, they thought about finding another singer and to keep going, and they pulled the plug. They did something with that. I talked about this a little bit before, that that band Tad on the Sub Pop record, the Sub Pop episode, the real big heavy set dude.
They did
some shows as Tad Garden when he was singing. He did something with them. It might have even been the tribute show to him, but they were just, they ultimately,
you gotta leave it alone.
Yeah, they said they're still thinking about trying to find another singer, but they would have a different name and it would not be Soundgarden.
Like, dude, give me a fucking break.
Yeah. And there's also probably some legal shit behind that too, because his widow has sued the band and the band has sued her, and so we'll get to all that shit at the end.
Wow. Shame.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, those first couple albums were on Sub Pop, and then the big one, Bad Motorfinger, 1991, the best year in the history of rock and roll music, as we did a whole 2-hour show on that. And, you know, it's just one of those
monster. The fucking album's a monster, bro. That's all you can say.
Yeah, dude.
I remember it coming on Headbangers Ball before anything. And it was just something different, man. Just something different about it than what anything was going on at that time.
Because some of their stuff was slow. Like Outshined is heavy, but it's slow.
Different.
Yeah, well, Rusty Cage is a little bit faster. Johnny Cash does an awesome cover of Rusty Cage.
Yes. But, yes. Yeah. Let's hear Rusty Cage.
Yeah, dude. Here you go.
Ah, yeah, rock and roll, baby.
There's a handful of just great songs on that album, dude.
Oh yeah, it's a classic.
Outshine was the big, I guess that was like the big first song.
That was a great song, man.
Yeah, and just they used a lot of weird, you know, I'm not a musician, but I was reading a little bit about how they use a lot of different like down tuning, which I guess was a big part of grunge. And they did a lot of like weird time signatures in all their music, which kind of made it sound.
Matt Cameron's one of the greatest drummers ever, man. Rock and roll drummers, you know. He's Soundgarden and Pearl Jam. He's super drummer, man.
Yeah, so he was the guy that replaced Cornell when Cornell originally the drummer and then moved on, and then they recruited Matt Cameron. Very cool.
And he's so fucking underrated. It's a sin.
Yeah, the fact that he played in two of the biggest bands that come out of that scene is just really cool.
And he played on Temple of the Dog.
Yes. Yeah, let's finish talking about Soundgarden, dude, and we can get into Temple of the Dog. But and then they followed up Bad Motorfinger with Super Unknown, which was another, just huge album.
That was huge. I remember, is that the one with Black Hole Sun?
Yeah, I hate that song. I'm like, maybe I didn't hate it. I heard it so much. It played
the fuck out, man. That's how big it was. I still don't, to this day, don't want to fucking hear it.
That album was huge. Yeah, that had Black Hole Sun. That had Black Hole Sun. That had Fell on Black Days. Super Unknown. Spoon Man. That was huge. They had that whole bunch of hits. And then the next album after that came out, that was Down on the Upside. That had a bunch of big cuts on it too. I'm going to play a little bit of Burden in My Hand because I think his voice really kicks ass. Cool. And a couple of that. Hear a little bit of that.
Crack a smile. Your mouth and drown in alcohol. It's down below the truth that's lying beneath the river bed. So quench yourself and drink the water that flows below her head.
And then it kind of picks up from there, but you can his voice is a little isolated there. It's just really
cool. That was a big fucking song, dude.
And then they broke up the year later, and they didn't come out with another album until King Animal came out in 2012. Dude, I love that album, man. I really do.
I honestly say I have probably never listened to it.
It's a good album, dude. It's worth listening to. It sounds a little like more pop than some of their earlier stuff, but it was also the first thing they put out in 16 years, something like that.
Is that when we went and saw them?
Yes, that was the album that came out. We might have seen them before that, but that was their reunion album. That was the last album they put together. The band, they were actually working on another album when he died, and that's kind of the sad shit that happened. So the band wanted to finish it. And his widow wouldn't release the tapes. She was like, well, nothing said that these were, like, he cut vocals. And she's like, nothing says these are Soundgarden songs. Maybe they're supposed to be his. And the band was like, but we were announcing that we're working on more shit. And the band sued her. Or no, she sued the band. And then the band sued her back. And it just kind of, it got really ugly and messy.
Dude, the music business is cutthroat, bro. It is a shitty business. That's the only way you can make it there is you're a kind of a shitty person and just step on everybody to get on top. That's what it takes.
And it's really sad that it kind of broke up, that it spiraled out of control. We talked about them. They were nominated to Rock and Roll Hall of Fame before. And we just said collectively that we didn't think they were going to get in because of all the fighting that was going on.
Yeah.
With his wife and with the band, and maybe this year's the year that they get in, and maybe that spurns them to kind of all make
they
up with
each
other.
Man, they should be one of the dudes in there, man.
Like, I agree.
Fuck. It's a ridiculous concept Hall of Fame thing anyway, but I like it. I think it would be a great achievement to them, that it means they'll be around forever.
I think putting them in too, you're also, even though Soundgarden is the one on the nomination, you're acknowledging all the other cool music that he made.
I bet you years from now, they'll put him in by himself.
Could be. He was that influential. But all right, so that's probably it on Soundgarden. And then before we jump into Audioslave, man, we should talk about Temple of the Dog. And Temple of the Dog was just a one-off project by members of Pearl Jam and Soundgarden to honor Andy Wood, who was Chris Cornell's roommate.
Yeah.
And was also the singer for Mother Love Bone.
Mother Love Bone was basically a little bit of Pearl Jam before Eddie Vedder came in. Andy Wood was a great songwriter. So he would challenge Cornell to write better songs than him. Like, they would push each other back and forth. Like, they're really great friends. And they, you know, they went to like different levels. Like, Andy had a great song on the Temple of the Mother Love Bone album, Crown of Thorns. I don't know if you can like look it up or something.
Yeah.
But just to have, maybe just to show like how the Mother Love Bone sound was.
Yeah, dude.
Talking to my altar, life is what you make it, and if you make it death, well, rest your soul away.
And that's basically before Eddie Vedder. That was Mother Love Bone. Yeah, I don't know exactly what year that album came out, but it was the hairband shit was still going on at the time. And maybe it sounds a little dated, but imagine like them progressing with Andy, and Eddie Vedder never came into the picture, you know?
He died in 1990. So yeah, it was before, obviously the album came out before that, or it came out like right when he died, right? It was like, I don't remember. We talked about it in the Sub Pop episode. It was like his death was right at the same time that the album came out.
Yeah, and it devastated Cornell.
Yeah, and like, he started writing all these tribute songs.
Yeah.
And
the Temple of the Dog album came out.
Yeah, so Jeff Ament and Stone Gossard from Pearl Jam were in Mother Love Bone, and Cornell went to them and just said, hey, I'm writing these, I've been writing some songs in tribute to Andy Wood. And those two guys, it was really cool. They said that Cornell coming to them and getting them back into making music really helped them get through with Andy Wood's death. I thought that was kind of cool.
I mean, Hunger Strike's a huge fucking hit.
Yeah. But
that whole album is amazing. What did I put on there from that?
You put Say Hello to Heaven on there. Let's play a little bit of that, dude. And I've got a little story on Hunger Strike, but here you go. This is a great song.
Take me from this place and the long windy curses. I heal my hair. Words never listen, and teachers old and never learn. But I'm warm from the candle, though I feel too cold to burn.
This was the first song from him that I heard, and I was like, God damn, this guy can really, really sing.
Yeah. Dude, holy shit, dude. I ran out and bought this fucking album when I discovered it. And I was like, I really don't like Soundgarden, but I fucking love this Temple of the Dog album. I love how Cornell sings on it, you know? And the songwriting, and, you know, Cornell's voice, you know, we've been talking about, but how about his songwriting skills? The things that he says, you know, it's hard to quote him by, you know, but just like listening to him in the last week and catching phrases that he says, it's like, man, he had a lot of pain in him, bro.
You messaged me that during the week. You were like, man, some of the lyrics he writes are just really big, heavy shit, man.
Yeah, they're really like, if you're, you know, maybe if you're bummed out, maybe listening to some of his shit's not a good idea.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he's got addiction problems. He's dealing with depression, and his roommate died. So, yeah, I totally understand. The story behind Hunger Strike was interesting. So, Gossard and Jeff Ament and then Mike McCready, they decided after Mother Love Bone broke up that they were going to start another band, and they were auditioning singers. And Eddie Vedder was in town auditioning for them. And Temple of the Dog was rehearsing, and Cornell couldn't hit the low notes in the song. So Eddie Vedder was like, yo, let me try.
No way.
And I read it. I have a quote from Chris Cornell. He said, Eddie Vedder sang half the song, not even knowing that I wanted the part to be there. And he sang it exactly the way I was thinking about doing it. It was just instinct. It was really cool.
It was meant to be, dude. Yeah. You know, we talk about the cosmic stars open up and magical things happen, bro.
I just remember when that came out and we were like, oh, wow, man, it's like Pearl Jam and Chris Cornell together. But you know, they did cut a whole album beyond that one song. But that song was enormous because it had the two of them on it.
Yeah, it was definitely a staple in my record collection.
Absolutely. And then it was cool that they got back together and they did that tour. I didn't see them on it.
I did.
That's great, man.
I saw them at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, they played a place that big.
Yeah, I have. You can't see it. It's a poster in my house, but I got the concert poster from it, and it's like a really big collectible now.
Very cool.
Yeah,
I don't know why I didn't see them when they came around. I wish I would have, but
it was fucking awesome, man. Yeah, yeah. And they didn't play Crown of Thorns, and I was pissed. No,
I guess they can't play everything. I don't know. And then, so after Soundgarden broke up, he joined Audioslave. And I think you told the story before that Rick Rubin was the one who suggested that they, you know, Rage Against the Machine, Zach De La Rocha left. The remaining guys in Rage were looking for another singer. They actually jammed with Be Real from Cypress Hill, but they didn't want to have another rapper. And there was always rumors that Lane Staley auditioned for them, but Tom Morello said that's bullshit. And then Rick Rubin said, hey, you guys should try doing something with Chris Cornell.
And, you know, I was thinking when I was listening to the Audioslave shit, I wonder if they like got to, like they realized like, oh, we can make a record together. They went cha-ching, like right off the bat. You know, you got Cornell in your fucking band. And the great thing it was to show that the Rage guys were better musicians than what they were playing on Rage Against the Machine albums.
Yes, absolutely, dude. So I put that in my notes. When they started, it was a Rage Against the Machine and Soundgarden supergroup, but they eventually found their own sound, and it was really cool.
They had some fucking, they had that mellow song that came out. I forget the name of it.
I Am the Highway.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
That just shows off how good that, you know, the guys from Rage are. Tom Morello is a fucking genius in my book.
Yeah, and the combination of Tom Morello's guitar and Chris Cornell's vocals, it just worked. I really, really enjoyed that stuff. And yeah, we could play a little bit of I Am the Highway.
You know what's great about that song? It's like, it's Audioslave. They automatically came up with their own sound. Like, boom.
It's not the guys from Rage with a different singer.
Yeah. You got fucking Chris Cornell. Like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, let's make some fucking songs. Amazing sounding and lyrics. Amazing. And his amazing vocals. How can it not be a hit?
I remember hearing that was coming. Because remember, like, they announced that they were getting together and they didn't like name the band yet. And they almost broke up before they even put out anything. But I remember hearing that they were like still working in the music store or maybe not. Yeah, I guess maybe we were. And I was like, holy shit, the guys in Rage are going to get together. That's going to be fucking awesome. And then it came out and a couple, you know, like Cochise has, that sounds like a Rage song with Chris Cornell. But then, yeah, they started as they progressed their sound. They just kind of found their groove and it was just really cool.
Yeah, I enjoyed what they do. Two CDs.
They did more
than CDs. I said CDs. Yeah.
No, they did more than that. They did three albums. All right, so they did one more than that. You know what was also really cool with them, man? I was watching a lot of shit on YouTube, and they would play Soundgarden stuff. They would play Rage stuff. They didn't get hung up on that. Like, well, Cornell never got hung up. Like, well, I didn't write that. I'm not going to sing it kind of shit.
Yeah, I've seen them in concert, man. Yeah, they're doing everything. It was fucking great.
I've got a whole bunch of YouTube things that I found. Like, so they covered Outshined, they covered Rusty Cage. I got Cornell doing Bulls on Parade.
Oh, that must be awesome.
I've got them doing Killing in the Name of. I've got them doing Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes.
Cornell could have been the greatest cover band singer ever.
Here's Seven Nation Army.
I bet like they sit in the fucking dressing room and they're like, oh, let's fucking do this song tonight. And they break into it, you know, something yeah, like that.
They're playing some huge festival, but they played all this other, they didn't care. And they would also do, they did a lot of like acoustic versions of their songs, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They did like a AOL thing, they did something for Sirius.
AOL.
Yeah. Wow. They're way back in the day. Wow. They did, Cornell did a version of Hunger Strike with Chester Bennington from Linkin Park too.
They were tight.
Oh, were they?
That was like his mentor. And when Cornell died, he was like heartbroken.
I didn't know that. And that's sad knowing that Chester committed suicide too. Yeah, man. So that's probably it with all the bands that he did. And then we can start talking about all the solo stuff that he did.
Which is my favorite shit.
It's so different. I mean, we played the Sweet Sun Shower when we came out of the monologue, and it's just so different than Soundgarden or anything else that he did.
When that first solo album came out, I mean, that Sun Shower song was on that Cruel Intentions soundtrack. And then he came out with his own solo album. I can't remember what the fuck it was called.
Euphoria Morning.
Great fucking record. Like, I love that automatically when I heard it. What did I put on there from that?
That song Can't Change Me was a big, yeah, that's what you put on here. Let's play a little bit of that. What she thinks is wrong. What could she want with me? Yeah. Wait just 1 minute here. I can see that she's trying to read me. Awesome.
Love it. I saw him on that tour and is fucking so good, dude. So good. I don't know if we have time.
But yeah. What do you got? I put
another song from that album on the playlist.
Preaching the End of the World.
Dude, this song is so good. His lyrics. Do we have time? Can we play?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it here.
Great song, man.
There's a lot of the stuff going on musically, too, that you can tell he's starting to try all the different stuff.
Oh, yeah. I think his mind was bigger than Soundgarden, man. You know, Soundgarden sounds a certain way. And, you know, I think Chris Cornell thought deeper than, you know, the Soundgarden thing. Yeah, you know, he was like, you know, no matter what band, no matter what thing Cornell did, it was going to be a hit.
I agree. I read somewhere in Spin Magazine that he said that Jeff Buckley influenced him a lot on this band.
Sure.
I could totally hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff Buckley was very cool.
Yeah. He did the great version of Hallelujah, right?
Yes. The Leonard Cohen song. Another guy who died tragically in a weird, you know, drowned in the Mississippi River while swimming.
Just like his father.
And his father drowns too. So yeah, really weird. But yeah, I really liked Jeff Buckley's.
Sure.
He only released a one album and then he came out with something posthumously after he died. But back to Chris Cornell. Yeah, dude, it was, he had a couple other albums. He came out with Carry On in 07, Scream in 09. Scream was really weird, man. That was the one he did with Timberland.
I don't know.
It's not here. I put Ground Zero on the playlist, dude. It's a lot of electronic stuff. It took a lot of shit from critics and I don't like it. I listened to it again yesterday. I appreciate he was trying to do other things. It just didn't work for me, but I'll play a little bit of this here.
Yeah, I have no idea. I really like that.
Did you? It sounded like that Robin Thicke song. That
no, man. It sounds like something grooving from the 70s. Not necessarily something like Shaft, but but you know, something grooving. That was, I don't know.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it when it came out. I hadn't listened to it really since then. But again, I said I appreciate that he's trying different things with his music. And teaming up with Timbaland is just a weird combination with the two of them.
That just shows he's like, dude, I'll work with anybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that. He came out with an album, Higher Truth, in 2015. He also did that song from the James Bond movie.
I love that song.
That is it's a great song, man.
That just, you know my name. That just says 007.
Yes, the music is really cool. His voice, like later at the end too, he really gets after and starts screaming and it starts kind of melodic. It's just, it's really cool.
Play it.
Yeah. We could do a show on like James Bond theme music too. All the artists, famous people have done it, but yeah, here you go. Love it, man. Love the horns in it.
I wonder if that was like nominated for like Song of the Year or something.
But the internet would know.
Holy shit, man. How could that not be?
It was nominated for a Grammy for Best Song Written for Visual Media. I don't even know that was a fucking Grammy category.
Yeah, weird.
Okay. I don't know if it won or not, but yeah, dude, it's an awesome song. It's one of my favorite solo things that he did.
Yes.
So then when he passed away and then they released this album of covers called No One Sings Like You Anymore. Some of the stuff on there, some of the covers are kind of obscure. They're not all like, I mean, there's some things that everybody knows, you know, like Patience was on there. Nothing Compares to You. We'll probably get to some of those. Does a song of a cover of a song called Stay With Me, Baby by Lorraine Ellison. It was in it was for an HBO show called Vinyl.
Oh, I love that fucking show.
Did you? I haven't seen it.
Yeah,
but I should watch it. But
oh, it's great. It's about the record business in the 70s.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And
yeah, it's great.
But this is like a soul kind of cover, dude. I'm going to play a little bit of it, dude. It was awesome.
Okay. Holy fucking shit.
Right?
What is that? What is that from?
Right? It's from Vinyl. That's the theme song from Vinyl.
Holy shit. I never like fucking like paid attention to it before.
your reaction was what I had this week when I was listening. You know, I got the discography up and I'm playing all his stuff and I'm just kind of working. And that came on and I was like, I stopped at what I was doing. I'm like, holy shit.
Unreal.
God,
he was so fucking talented, dude.
Yeah, man. Just doing like a soul cover. It was so awesome. Yeah. I was like, we're both kind of like sitting here like speechless a little bit.
It's like, I just love that series and I never noticed it.
I'll have to watch that, dude. Yeah,
it is great. It's fucking great. And I pissed me off. There was only one season of it. Yeah. Like the guy like discovers like punk rock. It's a pretty good story. Mick Jagger produced it or some shit. I don't know.
I was just going to say that. That's what I heard, that Mick Jagger's
kids in it. He looks just like him.
I think we're kind of like, we're almost winding up with talking about Chris Cornell. I got a whole bunch of other, there's things on the playlist we can move through, most of which are covers, but
they're interesting. Like, what did he do weird?
Yeah.
Billie Jean. How fucking weird is that?
Maybe before we do that, maybe we should take a break because we do have commercial sponsors.
Yes, sir.
So maybe we should bang those out.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. We'll be back.
Stick around.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks. We're so happy to have them on board because they make a great product. Their motto is grown here, sewn here, because Boldfoot Socks are made in America. They have a variety of styles and designs for everything from working out, going to work, or working on a podcast about music. They're also great people. The president, Josh, is a military veteran, and the company donates 5% of the proceeds to veteran charities. He bought a pair of Boldfoot Socks for a 100K race. That's over 62 miles, by the way. And he loved them so much that he bought the company. So as soon as you're done listening to us, go on over to boldfoot.com and check out all the different styles they have. That's boldfoot.com.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50
and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/Pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
All right, we're back from the commercial break. Thanks so much for sticking with us. We're going to bring it home. So we're going to talk about some of the cover songs that Chris Cornell did. And I thought this was so cool. I talked about this, you know, when we were talking about Audioslave, that they just would do all this other kind of stuff. And same thing with his solo material.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure everybody's heard that Nothing Compares to You that he does. And about the whole lot of love he does on that shit with Santana.
Yes. The Nothing Compares to You, before we move on to Santana, it's like, it's a completely different song than the Sinead O'Connor. I know it's a Prince song, but I think most people just associate it with Sinead O'Connor. And it gives off a different vibe to me.
He's like doing covers, right? Like he's done other covers. Like he covers one from U2 and he makes up his own lyrics in the songs. It's different. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that was weird because I was listening to that album this week and I heard that song and I just kind of looked down and it said one by Chris Cornell. And I'm like, but I don't recognize any of the words. I was like, oh, I guess he's kind of making his own lyrics to it. Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. And yeah, like I said, the Billie Jean thing was fucking weird.
The Billie Jean cover was cool because it was slowed down and it was acoustic and it was stripped down. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have heard that, too.
I doubt that. You got to play a little bit of it.
All right, yeah, I'm always down. Let's go.
Mother always told me, be careful who you love. Careful what you do before a lie becomes the truth.
Billie Jean's a stalker, dude.
I should have looked up why he decided to do that song.
Maybe he was being stalked, and that's like, I never realized. I just listened to the words that it's like about fucking stalker.
Yeah, the child is not my son.
Yeah, and she's like, you know, be aware of this chick. I don't know. Michael Jackson had all kinds of fucking people around him, and I'm sure the ugliness of the business was all over him. You know,
I like that version of Billie Jean better than Michael Jackson's, but I'm not a really big Michael Jackson fan.
Yeah. I hear you.
Yeah. Wasn't my favorite, but so you mentioned Whole Lot of Love and we have to circle around and play that. Cause that was another song that we traded back and forth this week as we were doing our notes. We're like, this is fucking awesome.
What was it's it with Santana, right?
It's with Santana. Yeah, dude, here. Dude,
he could have came in with fucking Jimmy Page and fucking John Paul Jones, and he could have rocked that shit. He could have been the replacement for Plant Man.
We said at one point that Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes is the only other guy who could sing those songs. Cornell could have done those songs. He could have been he could have done like just a whole album of Zeppelin covers, and he could have rocked that.
I think it would have been more prestigious. Cornell did it. You know, who gives a shit about Chris Robinson, you know?
Yeah, they're a little different singers, but still really cool.
Cornell's just the bigger name in my book.
Yeah, we got some other, what else is on here? Some covers. Billie Jean, he did Imagine.
It's pretty cool, that one.
I watched a video of him doing this on the Howard Stern show. And he was in there like, and Howard's at his best, I think, when he interviews musicians, because he gets them to play a song and then talk about it. It was really cool. But yeah, the version on here is pretty good, too. We could play a little bit of that. at the Pabst Theater. Of course we have to play it. It's at the Pabst Theater.
Cheers.
It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today.
Oh, so cool, man.
You put A Day in the Life on here? Is that the Beatles song?
Yes.
Really? All right, let's hear
play it.
I didn't hear that. Let's, all right.
Didn't notice that the light changed. Crowd of people stood and stared, yeah. Seen his face before, but nobody was really sure if he was from the house of blood.
Oh, I wish we could listen to the whole thing, dude.
That was really good.
Goosebumps.
Wow. Huh. I didn't get that far. I didn't listen to this whole. So a lot of this stuff we're playing is on from the box set, the Chris Cornell.
Yeah, it's on Spotify.
Yeah.
All the way down to compilations.
And I didn't get
this huge box set that has like fucking 50 tracks on it. And
yeah,
you could, and it's on Spotify for free. No, yeah, well, not free, but you know.
It's a shame. He covered Wild World with Cat Stevens, but that's grayed out for some reason. Probably Cat Stevens music, probably not on Spotify or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff on here. And there's also acoustic versions of Soundgarden songs and Audio Slave songs. And again, it's just really cool that he was willing to take this stuff and strip it down and step out from behind the music and just him and his voice. Just really cool.
I'll play his covers all night. I don't know how long we're doing this show, but you know.
Yeah.
He did a lot of them.
I don't know if there's anything else on the playlist that we haven't played yet.
We could put Compare to You on there just to hear it.
Yeah, dude. Sure. Here.
It's been 7 hours and 15 days since you took your love away.
It's fucking heartbreaking, bro.
I remember when that came out. I remember just like kind of flipping the channels, and I think it showed up on my Sirius in my car, and I was like, the hell is this? You know, Nothing Compares to You, Chris Cornell. And I listened to it. Yeah, it's live at Sirius. And I was like, man, this is really, really good. It's just
it's a
much different interpretation of the song. I mean, the Prince version is great too, but
yeah. Cornell had so much fucking pain in him, and his voice said it all.
I listen to that song a lot this week. You know, I tend to, when we're getting ready to do a show, you know, we pick the topic, and then it tends to be the only thing I listen to for 2 weeks. And I was just doing a bunch of stuff around the house, and I listened to this a lot.
Yeah, I enjoyed the whole playlist. I mean, I really got into the whole box set. I sat around on the weekend and just listen to that whole fucking thing. I'm like, this guy was on a whole level of writing songs, of his voice. He was probably a very complicated guy. You know, there's and a lot comes along with talent, man. It's, you know, there are people that are that fucking talented are very, I don't know. They have seemed to be a different kind of person, to be like they live their songs. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And he just never seems that he stopped working. And I said he had no hangups on recording other people's songs or reinterpreting his songs. Really cool, man. It seems like he just threw himself into his music, and that's was constantly what he was doing. Probably the only thing he knew, right? He dropped out of high school.
I don't think
he became a musician.
I think it was plain as day what he had, what he, you know, when he opened his mouth and sang, he was like, holy shit, You know, I wonder what that was like. You know, what was his first singing experience? You know, and like, who fucking taught him how to sing like that? Or was it all just raw talent?
Some people are just put on earth for a mission, and his was to be a musician.
Songwriter, man. Fucking and hardcore. What other rocking songs do we have on there? I know there's a bunch of songs on there that are just rocking.
Covers that he did?
Yeah. There's another Temple of the Dog song.
Oh, yeah. Reach Down. Yeah, all right. Here you go. Play a little bit of that. Cool.
Was
digging it.
Dude, that was probably from the reunion thing they did years right before he died.
2016. So yeah, that was the tour.
That's what I went to.
I saw it
in Madison Square Garden, and it was bigger than life, man. To hear all those songs live. Good shit.
Did they only play Temple of the Dog stuff, or did they do any?
That's okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I was expecting Crown of Thorns to be played.
Yeah, you didn't get that.
You know, Pearl Jam plays it all the time, which is cool. I'm obsessed with that song. I don't know.
Very cool. That might be it, man, on Chris Cornell. A lot of songs, a lot of great music.
How about all the lawsuit shit?
Yeah, dude. So, well, I talked about that a little bit, that his widow sued the band, and the band sued back. And I think all that stuff is still tied up.
I remember his wife was his manager, and when he divorced her, she was like, motherfucker, and she owned his musical instruments, so she like held on to his guitar collection, like totally as just like fuck you kind of thing.
She also had the keys to all of Soundgarden's social media accounts. And so Soundgarden now has access to it, but Soundgarden couldn't post any on any of their own, like their Twitter account, their Instagram and all that shit. She had all the keys.
What is her name?
Vicky? Hang on. I have it in my notes.
I want to give her a shitbag of the week.
Hang on. I got it on here. Yeah, Vicky Cornell. Look at that. I remembered something. Shitbag of the week. All right.
Yeah.
Shitbag of the week.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, she sounds like a nasty, nasty person.
The woman or the band sued her back, saying that the benefit concert. So after he passed away, they had a big benefit show for him. And the money was supposed to go to the foundation, the Chris and Vicky Foundation, Chris and Vicky Cornell Foundation, and the band sued saying that she pocketed some of the money. And I think that lawsuit got dismissed or dropped or something. But as far as I know, I think they're still fighting over a whole bunch of shit. So hopefully they get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and they make up and they figure something out.
I hope so, because I just hope they don't fucking put a lame ass version of Soundgarden out.
It sounds like they won't. I mean, if they come up with another band, they move on. Cool. We'll see. But
I don't know. Everybody's got a payday. Look at everybody's going on tour now. All the Springsteen tickets are going to go on sale. My Fish tickets are going to go on sale.
Yeah, that summer concert series is getting ready.
So. Everything's happening, bro.
Yeah.
You better get your tax return and put it all towards concert tickets.
Yeah, right. It's an investment. So, all right, let's keep on moving, man. Let's roll into Second Thoughts and Music News and the Electric Chair. Here you go.
I fucking love that.
I'm getting a little bit better teeing it up every time. I have a ton of second thoughts. So Mike from New Jersey said, I have a bone to pick with you guys. In your last episode, you mentioned Get a Grip by Aerosmith, and then you never talked about it. I feel like those Aerosmith videos with Liv Tyler and Alicia Silverstone were the peak of that generation of MTV. Otherwise, this was a great trip down memory lane. Yeah, dude, we brought up Get a Grip and we brought up the spaghetti incident by Guns N' Roses. And then we talked about Guns N' Roses and we never talked about Aerosmith.
Yeah, you know, we were like moving on and I was like thinking, oh, we didn't think of talking of Aerosmith. Like we forgot, but we already moved on to the next subject.
Right.
So, yeah, man, Get a Grip was huge.
That was like I saw them on that tour.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that was like their best-selling album.
Dude, how many fucking songs came off that album?
I'm looking at it right now. Eat the Rich, Living on the Edge, Crying, Crazy, Amazing. Yeah, dude.
I love Amazing. Amazing's guitar solo is fucking killer.
I don't like that soft type of music that Aerosmith came out with in the late 90s, the mid 90s.
I hear you. But it was like, you know, I was always into songwriting and shit. So I always loved that album. I thought like Steven Tyler and Joe Perry were like a great songwriting duo.
Okay. All right, Mike. Well, there you go. We talked about it. You know, just we're 2 weeks late, but we finally love it. It's all good. Jamie Hall sent us an email. He said, have y'all ever considered an episode on the best and worst covers done by other bands or artists? I dig the show a lot. I'm behind in getting caught up. I'm currently binging the episode playlist. Keep on rocking.
Yeah, keep on rocking.
I wrote him back, said, yeah, dude, we're absolutely thinking about that. That's been on our topic list for a while. And I asked him what some of his favorites and his least favorites were. He gave them to me. And I won't read them right now. I'll save it for when we... if we do the episode, but we went back and forth. We were emailing each other for quite a while. So really appreciate you taking the time emailing us. Let him know if he wanted some stickers, shoot us his address. We'll be happy to send him some.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And then Phil from Pennsylvania. So we have a new super listener, man. He may be taking over for the warden. So Phil has written in the last few episodes and he said, I finished listening to your episode on 1993. I actually worked at a Sam Goody in 1993 too. So this brought back a lot of memories. I had to listen to that goddamn Three Musketeers song 11 times a shift, along with Brian Adams' greatest hits and that friggin' Sinatra duets. I did love the Crash Test Dummies album, and I thought I was the only one who listened to that Guru Jazzmatazz album. Gangstar was my jam. Out of the half dozen episodes I've listened to so far, this one was my favorite. Oh, and that guy from the Spin Doctors looked like Rocky Dennis of Mask and Seal had a love child together.
Yes, he did. Oh, wow. This guy's going... to the bus straight to hell.
Phil, I used to play softball with Phil and I've known him for a long time. And it was really cool that of all the years I've known him, we've never once talked about music. And then we're all grabbing a beer and I mentioned the podcast and he was like, you have a podcast? And he's been listening to it. And I never knew he was so into music. And now we're having, like, he's texting me like, you didn't talk about the Jayhawks. I'm like, the Jayhawks came out in 94. Oh, wow. Not 93. Jayhawks. Yeah, it's just really, really cool, man. He's been giving me like you didn't talk about this, you didn't talk about that. Really cool.
You're just so much. You can't fit everything into the show.
Right.
Like we said something about how R&B didn't have anything good about it, but we didn't talk about Janet Jackson putting that fucking album out.
Yes, that was huge. Right.
That was fucking huge. I got to give credit out for that.
Yeah.
That was a kick-ass album.
And I kind of blew across that the Toni Braxton album. You said you were like, that wasn't a bad album. I just kind of shit on it and moved on. But
yeah, I mean, we didn't talk about Janet. That's all.
Yeah. All right. Music news. I got two things. First, U2. U2 had an ad in the Super Bowl where they announced a residency at the new MSG Sphere at the Venetian in Las Vegas called Octung Baby Live. U2 also announced that drummer Larry Mullen will be taking some time away from the band to recover from surgery. U2 has a new album coming out on St. Patrick's Day called Songs of Surrender. And they said that this new live show is supposed to be like Zoo TV for the new generation.
Dude, now I got to go to fucking Vegas. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm interested. Got my attention. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I saw it during the Super Bowl. I'm like, holy shit. Did anybody else see that? And nobody gave a fuck except for me.
Right. Yeah, Octung Baby Live, if they're going to play that whole album, would be
pretty cool. Now I got to save up for fucking Vegas and tickets to go see U2. Right. Because I would love to see that. I always wanted to see that tour.
Yes, fuck. I missed it too. All right. Well, they're doing a residency, so you know, you get plenty of chances.
Oh, I've never been to Vegas.
I've been out there a couple of times for work. It's a little too much for me, but you know. All right. The next thing I have, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees. We didn't talk about this last episode when they were out, but the Rock Hall finalists for 2023 are out. 8 of the 14 nominees are first timers. And here you go. Kate Bush, Sheryl Crow, Missy Elliott, Iron Maiden, Joy Division and New Order, Cyndi Lauper, George Michael, Willie Nelson, Rage Against the Machine, Soundgarden, The Spinners, Tribe Called Quest, The White Stripes, and Warren Zevon.
Fucking Tribe Called Quest. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Tribe was up last year, too. I thought they should have gotten in.
Yeah.
Willie Nelson, man, if Dolly Parton got in, Willie's going to get in. Willie's in his 90s, I think, now.
I don't know, dude. I am about like some of these original hip hop bands being put in.
Absolutely.
Like right, they were fucking awesome.
Yeah. The horses left the barn around putting hip hop artists in. And if you put Eminem in and you put Biggie, Tribe's got to go in.
Oh, my God. Without a fucking doubt. Like peer at the end over.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think, unfortunately, this is probably the year that Kate Bush gets in. I said that last year, but I think she's going to get in.
Yeah. Stranger Things really like
vaulted her.
Yeah.
I want to know who the fuck is on the nominating committee that keeps bringing her up, but you know, they don't
just snob ass motherfuckers. Probably.
Right. No motor.
Morrissey. It's Morrissey.
He is the most insufferable shit in music.
But, he was in the news again doing some shit. I don't know what he's talking about. He's just ridiculous.
I one of the episodes we did, I had a whole rant on him about how I can't stand him and his pretension. And I said, he's just the most insufferable prick in music. But I cut it out because I'm like, I don't want to go on this rant about him. But
no, but he does not give a fuck about people spending money to see him in concert or anything, or he's got to put everything down. He's just like the original hipster. He's a jerk off.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's the dude that he'll go into a studio or he'll go to a concert venue. He'll play a song and he'll be like, it's too cold, and he'll walk off.
Yeah. He's like Axl. Yeah. He's like Axl back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a jerk off. He was at the Met in Philadelphia. And somebody went and they were like, oh, he was really fucking good. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, I can't stand
it. So if the Smiths got together again, they would play like 3 nights at Wells Fargo. I'm like, no way. Wouldn't.
No way.
No fucking way.
All right, we're going to move on to the electric chair where we kill a song from being terrible. And you had a good one for this week.
Yeah, dude. Did you see the Super Bowl? Did you see Rihanna?
I did watch the Super Bowl.
I mean, obviously, we both watched the Super Bowl because the Eagles were in it. But Rihanna's thing was ridiculous. She looked like a fucking balloon up there.
We're going to kill Umbrella by Rihanna. I like her music. I thought she was lip syncing and did a really bad job.
Blame it. You like her music?
I don't think it's... I don't know if I like it. It's not...
I like her. I think she's rad. But her music, I don't know. She does have one of the greatest guitar players in her band. Betancourt. You know Betancourt from Extreme?
You mentioned that before. Yeah, he was there
at the Super Bowl. That was what I was looking for through the Super Bowl was him. And they kept showing him. And it was like, you know, motherfucker playing the motherfucking Super Bowl. You know Betancourt.
That went killing right it over my head, man. I totally missed. I totally forgot that. I remember you mentioned that in the show like a year ago. He was playing with her.
He was ripping it up there.
Yeah, whatever, man. I don't crap on her music. I didn't think it was really good. The performance, I thought it was a little out of sync.
But it could have been. When was the last rock and roll thing at the Super Bowl?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Dude, there's so many fucking bands that could, and you'll never say it because there's bad blood in it, but dude, can't you see like Bon Jovi being the halftime show and just blowing it the fuck up?
Yeah, I thought last year's was decent too with Dre and Snoop and all those guys.
Yeah, but again, there hasn't been a rock and roll fucking Super Bowl in years.
That's rock and roll though, man. Rock and roll is just, they don't do the rock and roll Grammy shit during the main show anymore. There was something too, like there wasn't a single band that was in like the top Billboard 100 this year or something like that. I forget what it was, man. It was like a only three songs by a band made it in the Billboard's top 100 in 2022. Glass Animals, Imagine Dragons, and One Republic. So it's like, yeah, man, rock and roll's, is rock dead? I don't know. We did a show on it.
I don't think it is, but what do we know? I mean, we're old. We're has-beens.
Right.
We're posers.
Yeah, everybody was freaking out. It was the first thing that Rihanna had done in a couple of years, but I don't know. I was kind of underwhelmed.
I was kind of not watching it because I know nothing, but like, it was so in the bar, all of these fucking white kids jumping up and down and singing to the songs. And yeah. I turned to my really awesome, great friend who's black. And I was like, look at all these fucking white motherfuckers, dude. And he start laughing.
That's funny. Like,
they were partying. And I made him fucking almost fucking keel over.
That's funny. I look at his Spotify, dude. She has 74, almost 75 million people a month listen to her. She has 1, 2, 3, 4 songs with over a billion listens and two with 950 million. So, what the hell do we know?
I'm just saying because there's no rock and roll to Super Bowl. That's why we're giving her the electric chair.
All right, well, let's do it.
Because she represents what's going on.
We sentence you to death.
She just represents where music is going and everything else.
Well, yeah, represent an entertainment for the fucking Super Bowl, man. Come on, the Rolling Stones there, Prince, fucking
Springsteen, Petty. Yeah, I get this. That's just the way music is going, man.
But. Dude, bring Metallica in. They fuck that shit up.
All right.
These bands are on their 40th anniversaries. You know?
We'll see who they do next. Next year will be Kate Bush.
Yeah. God.
And she'll make $1 zillion.
Yeah, we'll be fucking whatever her name is that shut down Ticketmaster.
Taylor Swift?
Yeah, that's her.
I'm surprised she hasn't done that yet. She hasn't done the Super Bowl.
I think I saw an article saying she said something about it, but I could care less.
I just Googled that. Yeah. I just typed in to make sure she hadn't done it. And it says there's a reason why she hasn't done it. She's too busy doing her albums.
They're not giving her enough money. That's why she ain't doing it.
Yeah, probably. I can see her doing it, man. I mean, she's
the biggest star in the world. Biggest star in the world.
I was actually surprised that Rihanna didn't have like Jay-Z come out. And they showed Jay-Z was there. I really thought he was going to come out for that song. That song that we just killed. She was, he's on that.
Oh, no, you'll never see Jay-Z come out and do anything with Rihanna because he like banged Rihanna. And Beyonce was like, yo, motherfucker. And that's when Beyonce's sister beat the shit out of him in the fucking elevator.
Okay, in the elevator. Okay.
Yeah, no fucking way you're going to see them together. Uh-uh. Right.
Well, that would be why he was there and he wasn't on the.
He was there with his kid.
Yeah. With his long hair, too. Do you see that? He had like, really
he's
long
got
hair.
Like very cool dreads going on.
He's always cool.
He's the man. He's Jay.
Yeah, Hova.
Yo, Jay.
All right. So that is a wrap on episode 58. We hope you enjoyed the celebration of Chris Cornell's music. We only played 30-second clips of the show, but if you want to hear the full version of these songs, we got you covered. Ryan put together a playlist for every episode, and there's a link to it in the show notes. And if you want more of us, we love hearing from listeners, and we read as much feedback as we can on the air. We're on Twitter and Facebook. We're online at prisonersofrockandroll.com. And you can always email us at show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. And that's it, man. So I think we'll be back I know we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. We're going to circle up, figure it out what we're going to talk about, and we're going to get right back to it. Thanks for listening.
I can't wait, guys. Hope everything's going well for everybody out there. So you know what I say is keep on rocking. Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner. Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.